currency they can get in order to trade and get new equipment for reconstruction. Those are the main two things. And of course, having diplomatic relations restored with other other Arab countries is going to help the trade part. And it's going to be a long road, and it's a very difficult road as long as the U.S. and U.K. and NATO keep their current position on Syria.
Okay. And on that note, I appreciate both of you being with me on this spotlight. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria out of Manchester. Isha Krishnaswamy, podcaster and journalist out of St. Petersburg. We appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 97 to 99 of chapter Nisan from the Holy Quran, recited by Hashim Rouhani.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Innal ladhina tawaffahum al malaa'ikatu ظالمي أنفسهم قالوا فيما كنتم قالوا كنا مستضعفين في الأرض قالوا ألم تكن أرض الله واسعة فتهاجروا فيها فأولئك مأواهم جهنم وساءت مصيرا إلا المستضعفين من الرجال والنساء فأولئك عسى الله أن يعفو عنهم وكان الله عفوا غفورا صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely as for those whom angels cause to die while they are unjust to their souls, they shall say, "In what state were you?" They shall say, "We were weak in the earth." They shall say, "Was not Allah's earth spacious, so that you should have migrated therein?" So these it is whose abode is hell, and it is an evil resort. Except the weak from among the men and the children, who have not in their power the means, nor can they find a way to escape. So these, it may be, Allah will pardon them, and Allah is pardoning, forgiving.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: a car bombing attack in Tel Aviv kills one as tensions run high in the occupied Palestinian territories over Israeli troops storming of Al-Aqsa Mosque. Tehran says it is contemplating reciprocal measure over the expulsion of four Iranian diplomats from Azerbaijan. Plus, Saudi and Omani officials reportedly plan to hold ceasefire talks with Yemen's Ansarullah movement in Sana'a. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour: another anti-Israeli operation by Palestinians. One has been killed and several others wounded in a car ramming attack in Tel Aviv. It happened hours after two Israeli settlers were killed in a shooting in the occupied West Bank. The incidents come as tensions run high on the occupied Palestinian land over Israeli troops' attacks on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Mona Kandil in Ramallah has the details.
A Palestinian from the city of Kfar Qasim in the lands occupied in 1948 carried out a shooting and a car ramming in Tel Aviv, killing at least one and wounding six others, according to the Israeli military in Tel Aviv. This man was shot and killed by the Israeli forces, and who said that he is a Palestinian from the city of Kfar Qasim. Immediately following the incident, more security forces were sent to the area. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ordered to boost security forces, Israeli forces, of course, to tackle the increasing number of attacks, according to a statement by the Office of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Palestinian resistance groups praised the operation. The Jihad movement issued a statement saying that this operation is a natural and legitimate response to the crimes of the occupation against the Palestinian people, adding that the attack happened on the 1 year anniversary of a similar attack that was carried out at the Dizengoff Street in Tel Aviv that led to the killing of a number of Israelis and wounding others.
Following the rising tensions over the storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli troops, Israel broadened its aggressions on Palestinians with severe air raids on the besieged Gaza Strip, leaving the impoverished residents in a dire situation. Ola Lassi reports from Gaza.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have spent a tense night as the Israeli regime's aircraft targeted multiple sites along the besieged Gaza Strip. The attacks came after Israeli military claimed that rockets had been fired from the Gaza Strip. The Israeli aircraft allegedly targeted military sites of the resistance group Hamas in various parts of the Gaza Strip. This is Israeli attacks focused on agricultural lands and residential areas across the Gaza Strip. No injuries were reported.
We were asleep and woke up to prepare the meal of Suhoor. I don't know what happened. More than five Israeli rockets destroyed the neighborhood. My house, in which I have been living for less than a year, has been destroyed, and my car as well.
The Palestinian resistance fired barrages of rockets from several areas in the Gaza Strip, setting off sirens in the cities adjacent to the coastal enclave. The resistance retaliation comes in the aftermath of Israeli savage aggression against the Palestinian worshippers inside Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied city of Al-Quds.
First, they fired a warning rocket and within 5 minutes launched another five rockets on a residential and industrial area. This house is home to a family of nine people who were asleep.
Israel has a deplorable record of unlawful attacks on Gaza, killing and injuring civilians, including women and children. Israeli army committed war crimes and crimes against humanity in hundreds of cases. They destroyed residential structures and internally displaced thousands of Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And this as Washington and international organizations have only whitewashed the crimes of the Tel Aviv's illegitimate entity.
The Israeli occupation forces committed a crime. The Israeli warplanes launched massive air raids at dawn to the rising civilians, including women and children. The resistance responded to the Israeli crimes in Al-Quds, and this premeditated crime overnight.
There are fears of further violence in the coming hours as the Israeli drones are hovering over the sky of the Gaza City.
As long as the Israeli occupation forces continue to violate the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the situation will remain tense. This round of clashes will probably end in truce, but the Israeli measures and practices in the coming days of Ramadan will define the situation.
Tensions have been high in the Palestinian territories, especially in the occupied East Al-Quds, Gaza Strip and the West Bank for months. And international mediation to de-escalate the situation bore no tangible results as Israeli aggressions and annexation of the Palestinian territories continued.
It is still unclear if the situation in the Gaza Strip would escalate. The Palestinian resistance, however, reaffirmed that they are ready to respond to any future Israeli aggression. Ola Al-Asi, Gaza.
Tehran says it is contemplating reciprocal diplomatic action after the Azerbaijan Republic expelled four Iranian diplomats. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said the move goes against the principle of good neighborliness. Nasser Kanani further called on Baku to avoid acting on what he called the wishes of Israel and other regional enemies. Azerbaijan's foreign ministry announced the expulsion of the Iranian embassy staff on Thursday. Relations between Azerbaijan and Iran have grown strained in recent months. The tension further deepened after the Israeli foreign minister claimed he had agreed with his Azerbaijani counterpart to, quote, form a united front against Iran. Tehran has blasted Baku's silence over the comments. Iran has sent humanitarian assistance to Palestinian refugees in Syria on the occasion of the International Al-Quds Day, which is marked on the last Friday of Islam's holy month of Ramadan every year. Our correspondent in Damascus has more.
Tons of humanitarian assistance sent by Iran have arrived at the gateway of Al-Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus. The aid was delivered to a Syria-based Palestinian faction in the presence of Iran's ambassador to Damascus, who reiterated Tehran's unwavering support for the Palestinians and their cause.
Iran was and will continue supporting the Palestinian cause and Palestinian factions' resistance. We condemn the recent Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip and Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's time for those who claim to defend human rights to open their eyes and see the crimes committed by the Zionist regime.
The convoy carries 4,000 food parcels. The aid will be distributed among the needy Palestinians in the refugee camps in Syria. Heads of Palestinian factions emphasized the importance of Iran's historic support for Palestinians' steadfastness, vowing to stay adherent to resistance until their land is freed.
What is happening today is a continuation of Iran's policy of standing by the oppressed people, particularly the Palestinian people, who are subjected to the ugliest barbaric fascist aggression at the hands of Israeli gangs. Iran provides assistance to Palestinians in refugee camps and in Gaza to help them to remain steadfast and triumph over the enemy. Such assistance is a symbolic issue that shows that Iran believes in the necessity of backing the Palestinian people until victory is achieved.
Before the onset of the Syrian crisis, Palestinians used to live a normal life until terrorists took over Al Yarmouk refugee camp in Damascus, the largest of its kind in the region. As a result, tens of thousands of refugees were displaced and scattered across the Arab country with increasing humanitarian needs.
Iran continues to stand by Palestinians on both the military and humanitarian levels. The Islamic Republic has been supporting the legitimate rights of Palestinians to fight against the Israeli occupation. Hamad Ali, Al Yarmouk refugee camp, Damascus.
Elsewhere, Saudi and Omani officials are reportedly planning to hold ceasefire talks with Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement in Sana'a next week, with an end to an eight-year-old aggression looming. The visit marks a progress in Oman-mediated talks. Sources told Reuters the talks will focus on a full reopening of Yemen's ports and airports and a political transition. If reached, the agreement could be announced before Islam's Eid al-Fitr holiday starting April 20. The chief negotiator of Ansarullah has said talks are on the way to end the Saudi aggression and siege, expressing hope the efforts will yield a peace pact that meets the Yemenis' demands. That comes as the Saudi-led coalition, which has been waging war in Yemen since 2015, lifted more restrictions on imports heading to the country. Commercial ships are now allowed to dock directly in the southern ports. North Korea says it has successfully tested a second nuclear-capable drone a week after it unveiled a separate underwater drone system. According to North Korean state media, the attack vehicle was tested from April 4th to the 7th. The report said the drone hit a simulated target after a 1,000-kilometer cruise underwater. Last week, Pyongyang disclosed its Hael-1 drone system. North Korea says the drone systems shows its deterrent capability and serve as warnings to the U.S. and South Korea. The duo has been conducting back-to-back war games in the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang sees the drills as a hostile act and rehearsal for invasion of its territory. On World Health Day, Afghan officials say the health situation is worsening in their country, ratcheting up the pressure on patients with special diseases, a lack of international aid, the poor economic situation, and political developments have added to the patient's misery. Our correspondent Abdullah Amirzadeh reports from Kabul.
On World Health Day, experts describe the health situation in Afghanistan as critical. Dr. Sadiq says the worsening condition has affected patients, especially those with rare diseases, adding the situation is further aggravated by multiple factors.
The health situation of the patients who come to us is critical, especially for thalassemia and hemophilia patients. Poverty and the politicization of the aid from international bodies and organizations is the main contributors to the worsening condition. Previously, aid contributions were made widely, but now they are rare and we face a lack of medicines. This trend has the potential to turn into a human catastrophe if it continues.
The harsh health situation in Afghanistan affects patients with special diseases way more. Patients who have congenital conditions that are too complex to control and impossible to cure. Abdulaziz, who has hemophilia, tells us more about his condition and his problems.
I have hemophilia, a disease in which when you bleed, it won't stop unless you have the medicine for it, which is factor 8 and 9. Previously, we used these medicines, but now, as you can see, I'm injecting blood plasma due to lack of the medicines, a method which is far less effective. Right now, there are many patients like me, but the required medicine is not being sent in quantities as it used to.
The declining trend of the health situation in the country started less than 2 years ago, when the country's political landscape witnessed changes and the Taliban took control. Following that, relief international organizations halted or reduced their activities there. It is believed that the aid that used to come to Afghanistan is politicized due to the political changes that took place in the country. Still, people and the patients are the ones who are paying the price, sometimes at the cost of their lives. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
A new batch of classified documents detailing U.S. national security data has been leaked on social media. The military documents cover a range of topics, including the Ukraine war, West Asia, and China. They are believed to be part of a larger tranche of intelligence produced by the Pentagon. This follows an earlier leak posted on Telegram and Twitter. It exposed sensitive details about the Ukrainian military and how Kiev is working with the US and NATO on a counter-offensive against Russia. The Pentagon says it is investigating the leak, which it is blaming on Moscow. It says Russia is using this as a disinformation operation to sow doubt about Ukraine's counter-offensive plans. Energy prices in Italy have jumped last year, according to government figures, posing a serious threat to the competitiveness of Italy's industry. Our correspondent in Rome has the details.
A new quarterly report by Enea, the National Agency for New Technologies, Energy and Sustainable Economic Development, has found that electricity and gas prices skyrocketed in Italy last year. According to the research agency, the average price of electricity rose by 100%, while the price of gas increased by nearly 60% over the previous year. Most analysts have been blaming this rise solely on the war in Ukraine. However, some energy market experts and an increasing number of people from the general public have come to different conclusions over the past months.
The spike in energy prices started before the war in Ukraine. It was driven by reduced gas imports from Russia, which later aggravated. EU member countries were then being forced to get their energy supplies from other sources at much higher costs.
It was just big-time speculation on energy markets. The emergency, the war in Ukraine, they were just pretexts. I think most people have realized that.
The Enea report on soaring energy prices also points out that high prices are not only badly impacting households, but remain a serious threat to the competitiveness of the Italian and European industry. When the government was formed last October, Prime Minister Meloni vowed that her administration would combat speculation and unjustified increases in the cost of energy. 6 months later, the Italians are still struggling with high energy prices and the consequent soaring cost of living.
So far, the Meloni government has put forward roughly the same measures adopted by the previous executive to counter rising energy costs. The government's latest initiative, which I'm afraid will bring little results, features obliging petrol stations to display the average national price of fuel alongside the prices that they charge to avoid speculation. It should not be forgotten that Meloni has also scrapped a 400 million euro windfall tax on energy giants.
The cost of energy has tripled. Last month, our bill was 181 euros for a three-member family in a two-story flat. Are they crazy?
In Italy, gas accounts for more than half of residential energy consumption. Rome covers more than two-thirds of its energy needs by imports. Max Civili, Rome.
Thank you for staying tuned. Do stick around.
The whole world is silent towards oppression. Even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. Oh, the most merciful.
God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of this series. God has given every creature whatever it needs. Every creature that is born by nature and according to its instinct knows how to survive. Animals know which forces to employ to live. They know how to make a nest, how to find their pair, how to breed their children, how to hide from enemies or fight them. This shows that a powerful force is guiding all creatures in the world. This has been mentioned in the Quran. For instance, in Ayah 50 of Surah Taha, it has been narrated from Prophet Moses that he told the Pharaoh, "Our Lord is He who gave everything its creation and then guided it." This guidance is just related to the material life of creatures, but a creature like human being has both a physical aspect, the body, and a metaphysical aspect, that is the spirit. If his spirit is trained properly, human being will reach a status which is not achievable by any angel. Knowing how to survive in this world does not suffice for reaching the lofty goal of creation. Humanity is not restricted to eating, sleeping, and fulfilling other desires. The way to reach real humanity has been revealed by God as the Creator and clarified by His messengers. Guidance is one of the greatest bounties which have to be always thanked. This bounty is much greater than health, sustenance, money, and even security, because all bounties will perish one day, while guidance is the bounty which will take us to God's satisfaction and whatever good in the world and the hereafter. Such a great bounty requires great gratitude, a gratitude which encompasses all aspects of our life. Verbal thanksgiving is just part of this gratitude. So let us pray in this way, as Imam Mahdi has taught us in Dua Iftitah. All praise belongs to Allah, who has guided us to this, and we would not be guided if Allah didn't guide us. Allah says in Ayah 12 of Surah Al-Layl, "Indeed, with us rests guidance." Allah appointed the prophets to guide human beings through worship. Prophethood ended with Muhammad Mustafa. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and after him, his infallible successors took the helm of guidance as the divine leaders. It is quiet logic to follow a person who is immune from sin and mistake, just like the Prophet himself. The infallible Imams were the vicegerents of God in their time. They had the mission of guiding mankind, but the oppressive and usurper rulers in every era did not let masses to discern truth from falsehood and prevented the Imams from implementing the laws of religion in society. Throughout history, the faithful were scared of oppressive regimes to properly fulfill their religious duties. Therefore, the infallible Imams lost their lives in the way of Allah to lead the Muslim Ummah. However, Allah concealed the 12th Imam from the eyes and ordered him to live in occultation till the time that people in the world would get prepared to understand the laws of religion and be ready to sacrifice their lives in the fight against oppressors. Imam Mahdi cannot be seen with the eyes yet. He lives among us. He knows each and every one of us and observes our deeds. His most famous name is Mahdi, meaning the source of guidance. Although he lives in occultation, he guides the Ummah from behind the curtain. According to statements of the Ahlul Bayt, Imam Mahdi is like the sun behind the cloud, whose light and warmth reaches the earth, but in a smaller scale.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Demining operations. These children are victims of a war that ended over a half a century ago. Landmines and explosive remnants of war are the cursed inheritance left to them by war. These munitions were left in this war zone and have been buried over time. Some failed to explode after firing, and some were prepared to be fired, but were left behind when the forces had to advance or retreat in a hurry. Their sensitivity has changed over time, and the original standards can't be relied on during the clearance process. These types of ordnance can be moved around with every flood. The composition of the soil in some parts of Khuzestan province is such that surface runoff water doesn't seep into the ground very easily. This means that some contaminated areas become inaccessible due to flooding. The area of the contaminated region changes with the rise and fall of water levels. These regions cannot be used under any circumstances and even pose a threat to safe zones nearby. Thank you. Until recently, this region was underwater, and the demining squad has only just been able to access it. Another difficulty of the demining process is the effect that time and changes in climate have on the landmines and ordnance. They might not be triggerable anymore, or they might have become more sensitive. An anti-tank mine might have become as sensitive as an anti-personnel mine. Any problem becomes more difficult to solve when a clear assessment of the matter can't be made. In the case of landmines and unexploded munitions, these changes are literally a matter of life and death. Demining areas with such diverse geographies and climates is a difficult, exhausting, and time-consuming task. We need highly skilled and effective forces with specialist training to rid the world of unexploded ordnance and make it safe for civilians again. It goes without saying that these forces also need advanced tools and a huge budget. Halime was only 10 years old when, on her way back from school, she stepped on a mine carried to her village by the river. Khatun was 7 when she stepped on a mine while playing with her friends in the village. That area had previously been demined. Fardin was busy working in the field when he came across a plastic object. He picked it up out of curiosity, and the mine exploded in his hands. Both his hands were amputated at the wrists. He completely lost one of his eyes, and the other eye can only barely make out the light. These victims were all born after the war, but they have fallen victim to its heritage. Arbab was part of a demining squad, but was maimed while trying to defuse a mine that had become extra sensitive as a result of the passage of time. The victims of mine explosions and their families need immediate medical attention and financial support after the accident. They won't be able to carry on living normal lives anymore. For instance, a child who has lost a limb needs new prosthetics as he or she grows older, as well as constant physiotherapy and psychotherapy. Halime is now receiving medical care and financial support, but nothing can make her forget the pain she has suffered. Khatun is determined to do what she loves, despite her physical and mental scars. Fardin is going through the different steps of his treatment and is glad that his remaining eye is getting better after several operations. Arbab was lucky the protective gear he was wearing saved his life, but he can't participate in the demining operation anymore and will be supported by the mentioned network instead. Landmines have been much crueler to the children of the Deh Gorji village, though. The children discovered a Volmara bouncing fragmentation mine while out playing. This type of mine detonates in two stages. The first explosion launches it about 40 to 50 centimeters off the ground, where the main charge detonates, projecting more than 1,000 fragmentations in all directions and killing or wounding everyone within an effectable radius. 5 children were killed. For a child, the difference between knowing how to act when faced with a landmine or unexploded ordnance and not knowing how dangerous they are is literally life or death. Children are the age group most hurt by these munitions. That's why the more the number of civilians educated about them, the less the casualties. Demining operations must be supplemented with civilian education, which has a real effect on reducing deaths and the loss of limbs. The geographical dispersion, the varying lifestyles and ages of the people at risk from landmines, makes educating them a big challenge. Not to mention that most of these people are villagers, shepherds, and nomads. Some of them are even travelers who just pass through these areas. The places those people need to be educated have a larger combined area than the regions that require demining. The educational materials and methods need to be adapted to the different ages and different sections of society. The Mine Action Center is responsible for the policy making, planning, and assessing the effectiveness of the education. Accordingly, the center focuses on prioritizing the different regions in need of education and producing and adapting the educational materials to match the type of threat and the target audience. The educational materials are produced in the form of documentaries, stories, or even animations in different local languages and provided to educators. Brochures, books, and pictures are also used in some areas. Offering educational programs in addition to demining operations has resulted in an estimated 90% drop in the number of casualties compared to previous years. The demining process in Iran has one major difference with the rest of the world, and that is the limitations caused by the unjust politically motivated sanctions which prevent any country or international organization from collaborating with the Islamic Republic. A look at the statistics reveals that Iran hasn't received any financial aid for its humanitarian demining activities. In addition, Iran isn't given access to advanced equipment. It is even banned from using the IMSMA, the Information Management System for Mine Action, which registers information regarding the detection and clearance of mines. Put simply, Iran is barred from receiving any equipment or financial and scientific aid. Why? Because Iran is sanctioned, and therefore its demining operations are also sanctioned. After the war, the lands all along the border was unusable due to contamination. Every day, life and business in these areas were facing total destruction. More important, however, was the damage done to the public's mental sense of security. This map shows the regions of Iran's five border provinces contaminated with landmines and unexploded ordnance after the end of the war. This map shows the state of those regions after 30 years of demining. Despite all the sanctions and limitations, published statistics reveal that the Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center boasts the highest number of discovered mines in 2019.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is no stranger to the work we do, and Excellency, your country has consistently supported the efforts of the General Assembly in the elaboration of resolutions on assistance in mine action and other very important disarmament resolutions.
They might have been able to impose great limitations on Iran's humanitarian demining activities through their sanctions. But nevertheless, the Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center still outperforms all other countries when it comes to mine clearance, thanks to its achievements and wealth of experience.
And I think also the mix of the countries and the participants in this particular roundtable was just excellent. I mean, I must congratulate the Iranian, the IRMAC, for having done such a good choice. I can also say that, you know, we all know that Iran plays a very particular and important role in this region. And it is clear that in the future there is a very good prospect to have a stronger interaction for all of you with the Islamic Republic of Iran with regard to humanitarian demining and maybe also in other aspects.
Opening the doors of the Iranian Mine Action Center, which is an institution under the Ministry of Defense, and which shows also the openness and readiness of the Islamic Republic of Iran to share and learn from partner countries. So these would be my improvised last words today.
This is the Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center's International Education Building, a center for the exchange of experience, support of research and scientific activities, and improving the knowledge and skill of mine clearance squads. This education center represents the peak of the Mine Action Center's abilities and the essence of its scientific advancements. Research projects regarding novel ways of clearing mines are always of high priority at this center. This complex isn't restricted to just Iranian squads, and students from other countries are allowed to attend the programs held here. This center strives to expand humanitarian demining efforts and help improve the mine clearance capabilities of other countries. Iran's increasing knowledge of demining has led international institutions and other countries struggling with the clearance of unexploded munitions to request to collaborate with Iran. Khuzestan province, Darkhobain, this region had been underwater for the past years, and as the water subsided, an unbelievable scene began to emerge. Thousands of unexploded ordnance, left over from the war, were sticking out of the ground, which couldn't be seen before. Although the area had been previously cleared, this deadly munition field had expanded the contaminated area once again. Iranian lands contaminated with mines and unexploded ordnance were cut from 4,200,000 hectares to around 100,000 hectares through 30 years of demining operations. Clearing the remaining area, however, is proving more difficult than all the previous areas that had been cleared combined. This is because these lands have very special characteristics. At least 50,000 hectares are flooded, making the job similar to finding a needle in a haystack. These regions need to be demined regardless, because they can contaminate nearby safe zones and are a threat to the lives of those living there. The more advanced the weapons became, the more people died after the wars ended. As soon as one war ended, another would begin, and so the weapons never stopped firing. One thing all those wars had in common was the unexploded munitions and mines they left behind. Very little attention is paid to the deaths caused by unexploded munitions, because they happen after the war is over, and because everybody thinks the war is not going to claim any more lives now that it's over.
In the limelight.
U.S. dollar hegemony starts to crumble amid developing economies shift to other currencies for settlements. Ditching the American currency in trade will diminish Washington's ability to impose its will. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. According to Global Times, countries across the world have accelerated de-dollarization and increasingly shifted to other currencies that would provide the stability which, according to some experts, is a result of the U.S. irresponsible monetary policies, including monetary and fiscal splurges in the previous years and unrelenting sanctions on Russia by weaponizing the dollar. Major economies have made various attempts to reduce their reliance on the U.S. currency since the 2008 global financial crisis, but never in the last decade have there been so many countries making notable moves toward de-dollarization as there have been in the last 2 weeks. China and Brazil have reached a deal to settle trade in their own currencies, ditching the U.S. dollar as an intermediary. The AFP reported recently, citing the Brazilian government. It's reported that the yuan assets have surpassed the euro to become Brazil's second largest in the country's foreign reserve, accounting for 5.37% of Brazilian central bank holdings at the end of 2022, compared with the euro's 4.74% share. India, which the U.S. aims to court with the aim of containing China's rise, is shying away from the dollar. India and Malaysia can now use the Indian rupee to settle trade in addition to other currencies. The Times of India reported recently, citing the Indian Ministry of External Affairs. In addition, finance ministers and central bank governors from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, discussed the reduction of their reliance on the U.S. dollar, euro, yen, and British pound for financial transactions, and started to trade settlements in local currencies at a regional meeting held recently in Indonesia. Local media outlet The ASEAN Briefing reported recently. Most importantly, the dollar's decades-old dominance of international oil trade is becoming to fall apart, as a growing number of major economies have begun to trade in other currencies. China recently completed its first purchase of liquefied natural gas, LNG, from France's Total Energies, using cross-border yuan settlement. Tiu Yong Hong, a professor at the International Monetary Institute at Renmin University of China in Beijing, told the Global Times recently that the yuan's internationalization is gaining pace after the buyer's pricing power on the market has shifted from the U.S. to China at the global bulk commodities market. The U.S. has gone from being the largest importer of crude oil to being an exporter, while China has become the world's largest buyer of oil, she explained. The global de-dollarization drive is gaining pace. The U.S. has constantly abused the dollar as an international reserve currency over the last two decades, which hurt other currencies and economies. Dong Dengxin, director of the Finance and Securities Institute at the Wuhan University of Science and Technology, told the Global Times, "As the world heads towards multipolarity and the U.S. is no longer the world's largest trade economy, the dollar hegemony will fall apart gradually, which seems an inevitable trend," according to Dong. Tan Xiaofen, an expert at the School of Finance and the Central University of Finance and Economics, told the Global Times recently that de-dollarization has shown an irreversible trend regarding international trade valuation and settlement. Tan said the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, the COVID pandemic, and other geopolitical factors have made countries rethink about financial security. Tiu said that many countries have proposed to adapt to the needs of the development of the digital economy. Therefore, it is necessary to reform the international payment system, including the digital currency settlement instead of the U.S. dollar. For example, the Multiple Central Bank Digital Currency Bridge project has moved from the experimental phase to the pilot phase. The project can realize point-to-point settlement using bilateral currencies, so it can greatly improve the efficiency of trade and reduce cost, according to Tiu. Backed by the world's largest gold reserves, thanks to the Bretton Woods Agreement, the dollar was crowned as the world's reserve currency after the Second World War. Other countries rushed to accumulate dollar assets, believing it's a safe haven. However, the U.S. irresponsible monetary policies have time and again caused negative spillovers to developing countries. The 2008 U.S. subprime loans caused global financial crisis. The U.S. Federal Reserve's ultra-loose monetary policy after the outbreak of the pandemic in 2020 and currently the radical pace of its financial tightening have all hurt other economies severely. The U.S. flooded the globe with massive monetary and fiscal stimulus measures and then resorted to the most aggressive tightening of monetary policy seen in decades to tame runaway inflation, which have seriously disrupted the global financial markets. As a result, many developing economies that export commodities and borrow in dollars are facing risks, including inflation, local currency depreciation, and capital outflows. You said, in fact, the global de-dollarization has started a long time ago, and the recent aggressive interest rate hike policy of the U.S. and the U.S. banking system crisis have made countries worry about the robustness of the U.S. financial system, which may lead to increased volatility of the U.S. dollar. In addition, the U.S. led international financial sanctions on Russia since the start of the Russia-Ukraine crisis have triggered a crisis of confidence in the dollar system, Tian Yun, an independent analyst, told the Global Times. He predicted that more countries are expected to reduce their dollar assets and resort to dollar currencies, including the Chinese yuan, in cross-border investment and trade settlements. Analysts noted that various countries are trying some local currency settlement experiments by developing digital currency solutions to weaken the position of U.S. dollar